The talk would be risky. Owen said as much to Anchorette. She shook her head. Just because she talks more than you do doesn't mean she can't be trusted. She just has a different personality. The question is whether she is trustworthy. And that, my dear Owen, will be determined over time. Who do you think her first loyalty is to? Owen perked up.
Her grandfather.
And who is her grandfather's first loyalty to? She asked, giving him a knowing smile. Owen frowned. The king. Best to keep that in mind then, Owen. Did the king kill his nephews? He asked. Anchorette looked at the floor. I don't really think so, she answered. But I was far away when it happened.
But everyone says...
She lifted her gaze to meet his eyes, and his voice trailed off. He swallowed.
But everyone says he did it, so it must be true.
Anchorette smiled, but it wasn't a pleased smile. It was almost a smile of pain. It's been my experience, Owen, that when everyone agrees on some point of fact, it tends to be the biggest deception of all. She reached out and tousled his hair. Remember that. Never trust another person to do your thinking for you. That sounded a little strange to Owen, but he accepted it. Do you have a plan yet, Anchorette? Her eyebrows lifted. A plan to save you? He nodded eagerly. She smoothed her skirts, sitting on her knees before him. The jewels of her necklace glimmered in the candlelight. He leaned forward a little, eagerly watching her face. I do have a little stratagem. She confided. What is that? Is it a new necklace? She laughed softly. No, it's not a gem. Well, in a way it is. It's a gem of an idea. A jewel of a thought. Rough, uncut, and unpolished. But all good ideas start out that way. Will you tell me? I need to be careful, Owen. New ideas are delicate. They can be crushed easily. New ideas can be killed by a sneer or a yawn, or even a frown. Owen was not sure what she meant by that. Perhaps reading his expression, she said, Have you ever seen a seedling grow? A new flower? They are so small and delicate, but they become sturdier as they grow. The easiest time to pluck a weed is when it is little. New ideas can be that way. I see, Owen said. He was a little disappointed because he wanted to hear her plan, unfinished as it was. Let me tell you what I can, she said, assuaging him. When you want to accomplish something, you should start out with what you want to achieve and then work backward. Staying alive isn't the goal. What I want to do is change the king's feelings about you. He won't want to destroy you if he thinks you are valuable. Like a gem. Owen's face perked up at that. Like a stratagem? She smiled. Exactly. Who would be most valuable to a ruler? You already know this. Someone who is fountain-blessed? Owen answered, and she nodded enthusiastically. Yes, and loyal. My stratagem, Owen, is to trick the king into believing you are both. That was the most brilliant idea he had ever heard. I think I'd like to be fountain-blessed, he said. I'm sure you would. And for all we know, you might be. But most people do not exhibit that disposition until they are 11 or 12 years old at the earliest. That's when their gifts start getting noticed by others. I'm only 8, Owen said dejectedly. Hence, why I'm still nurturing this thought. I don't have 3 years to spare. How does one persuade a cunning prince like Severn that a young boy is fountain-blessed? I'm still working on it. Give me time. She winced, and though she would never say so, he knew she was in pain. I'm feeling tired, Owen. I am too, he said, though he wasn't very tired at all. He gave her a hug, loving the soft silk feel of her dress against his cheek, her warmth and tenderness. She kissed his brow and sent him back through the tunnels to his room. Owen's mind was full of wandering thoughts as he slipped down the stairs through the secret corridors leading to his room. He knew the way so well he could have made the journey blindfolded. He paused at a large painting, listening for the sound of footsteps, and heard nothing. The castle was asleep. He loved it that way. The rustle of tapestries, the shouting silence of the blackened halls, the deep shadows perfect for concealment. He did not even need a candle anymore as he stole spider-like through the passages. He opened the door of his room and immediately noticed the dim glow from a dying candle on a chest. Had he not doused his candle before leaving?
"Where have you been, Owen Kiskaden?" someone asked in a conspiratorial whisper.
It was Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer, of course.
Chapter 16. Loyalty Binds Me.
"This is my room,"
Owen said in a challenging tone. The girl's eyes lit up mischievously.
"I know it's your room. Why weren't you in it? Where were you, sneaking something from the kitchen?"
He shook his head and folded his arms.
"Why are you sneaking around?" "I hate sleeping," she confided. "It's so boring. Besides, I couldn't wait until morning to tell you."
"What?" he pressed, curious. She leaned forward on her knees, her eyes almost silver in the darkness.
"I spoke to Grandpapa. The king didn't kill his nephews, that's a lie, but he is responsible for their deaths, only it's not totally confirmed that they're dead. I'm a little confused on that part."
Owen scrunched up his nose.
"That doesn't make any sense. You told me the king was going to kill you. You said he killed his nephews, but I know he didn't. Grandpapa would not have lied to me."
"He doesn't tell you everything," Owen said flatly. "He's a grown-up."
"He tells me everything," she said with a twinkle in her eye. "He's never lied to me, ever. You know about the coins and the fountains? They don't grant wishes, Owen. That's silly. The sexton shovels them out. Grandpapa told me, and he even let me watch. I never throw coins in fountains to make a wish anymore. It's a silly tradition."
Owen frowned.
"Just because he said that doesn't mean..."
"Yes, it does," she interrupted. "He doesn't lie to me. Here's what he said. I knew you'd want to know. There was confusion when the old king, Cousin Eritor, died. We were only 6, Owen, just babies. Now we're 8 and we're more grown up. My grandpapa said that one of the princes lived in the west, the other lived in King Fountain. Uncle Severn was named as their protector. You know his badge, right?"
"The boar," Owen said, nodding. Just thinking about it made him want to shiver.
"The white boar," she corrected. "You know his motto, loyalty binds me. His own brother trusted him with his sons, but the queen tried to steal them away. She summoned the sun and the west back to King Fountain and sent soldiers with him. When Severn went to meet the prince, the queen was planning to have her men ambush and kill him. You see, the queen's manor was on the way there. That's where the ambush was going to happen, but someone warned him."
Owen scratched the back of his head. He was still standing in the doorway. She sighed at him impatiently and waved for him to join her on the bed. He carefully shut the door and climbed up in front of her, kneeling like she was.
"Do you know who warned him?"
Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer asked him archly. She had kept her voice low and conspiratorial. Owen shrugged. "Ratcliffe?"
"No, no, no, Owen. Who was Severn's most trusted man, the one he executed for treason? This was before Ratcliffe."
Owen had no idea.
"How do you know all this?"
"I love stories," she purred like a cat. "Not pretend stories. I love true stories. My grandpapa tells me all about them. He's so quiet, but he listens and he watches. He knows who to trust and who is lying. He listens all the time."
Owen wondered why the granddaughter didn't follow his example, but he kept that thought to himself. She squeezed her knees, her eyes lit with excitement.
"Lord Bletchley! Cousin Bletchley,
He stood a good chance of being on the throne himself. King Eridur never trusted him, but Severin did because he was the one who warned him about the trap. They grabbed the prince as he was going to King Fountain, on the very same road you traveled to get here. Isn't this exciting?
He was more confused than excited, but he did not want to dampen her enthusiasm.
So they grabbed the prince.
Exactly. That's why the queen went to Our Lady. Her trap failed, and she feared Severin's revenge. She stayed in Sanctuary and let her other son out. Everyone knows she has stayed in Sanctuary so long because she's still afraid of his revenge. The two hate each other.
I've met her, Owen said softly, rubbing his chin. You would have to ask Anchorette about this.
Really?
She asked, almost shrilly, grabbing both of his hands and squeezing them hard. He yanked them away.
I snuck away from the palace, he said. I went to Our Lady to escape.
Her mouth formed a big O of surprise, and she sat up straight, as if all the fragments of a broken jug were coming together in her mind. The look she gave him transformed from eagerness to newfound admiration.
You didn't,
she whispered in awe. Owen nodded.
I snuck out of the porter door in the wall and walked there. Ratcliffe caught me because Mancini told him I was there. I don't like Mancini much.
He's a spy, but he's not very good, she replied in agreement. So you met her? They say she uses witchery to stay young, but I don't believe any of that stuff. Was she pretty?
Owen felt a little uncomfortable. I think so. I don't know.
She waved aside his response. That's amazing, Owen. You are so brave. I thought you would be too scared to try something like that. So you like to sneak around, too?
Her choice of words implied that she did as well. He nodded shyly. She started shaking her hands around excitedly.
We're going to have so much fun together. There's a secret part of the grounds, the cistern. Have you found it yet?
He stared at her in surprise. What's a cistern? She grinned.
It's like a well, except it catches rainwater from the clouds, not from underground streams. Grandpapa showed me the wall blocking it. He said it's the only place I can't go, which makes me want to go there even more.
Won't we get in trouble?
Owen asked.
She waved a hand dismissively. I sneak around all the time, so I have to tell you the story of Bletchley. Don't you just hate his name? Bletchley. It's like you're throwing up. If your family name was Bletchley, I wouldn't marry you. Kiskaden I love. It's not as good as Mortimer, but good enough. Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer Kiskaden.
She shivered with delight.
Oh, yes, Bletchley. He was nothing but a lying guttersnipe. He tricked Uncle Severin into giving him control of the Espeon, which meant he got control of the princes. Then he made them disappear. And who gets the blame? Severin gets the blame. It was a nasty bit of work, I tell you. A cruel trick. Bletchley killed the princes, and that's why Severin executed him for treason. Everyone thinks the king did it, but he didn't.
She looked into his eyes and then, much more gently, reached for his hand.
You were worried that the king was going to put you to death, but my grandpapa thinks you'll be all right, and I believe him. Do you see why now? The king is upset that his nephews died. He didn't want it to happen. Remember, his motto is, loyalty binds me. He took that motto to heart.
Owen was not sure what to think. One thing he knew, the Mortimer girl knew much more than he did. His parents had told him next to nothing about the families of the realm and the troubles between them. He knew his father had gone off to war again because the king had summoned him. He had been surprised to learn that his father was considered a traitor to the king. How was he supposed to discover what was true and what was tale? Everyone believed the coins vanished from the fountains and granted wishes, but just because they believed it didn't make it true.
Good night, Owen Kiskaden,
Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer whispered suddenly, stooping to kiss him on the cheek. And with that, she scampered off the bed and vanished out the door. The following day, the Mortimer girl took Owen on a grand exploration of the grounds. Jewel was not pleased with her and kept demanding they stop and rest, but the girl paid her no mind whatsoever. Grabbing Owen's hand, she led him on a merry romp toward the secret part of the grounds, leaving their elderly guardian lagging behind. Owen had passed the nondescript wall before and thought nothing of it.
But as she brought him closer, she pointed out how different it was from the adjoining structure. There were not any vines, and little moss on it either, which spoke to the fact that it was a new construction.
"My grandpapa said the cistern is just past it," she said eagerly. "I haven't figured out a way to get over it yet, but I think if we had a view from that tower," she said, pointing up at Anchorette's tower, "we'd be able to find a way in there."
She pressed her palms against the stone wall as if she hoped to topple it over.
"I think there's another way inside. A door, maybe. I've been trying to find a way into that tower, you know, but no one can help me."
Owen swallowed guiltily, for he knew the way to the tower, and he had no doubt that Anchorette knew the secret of the forbidden wall. He was itching to ask her. When Jewel finally caught up to them, sputtering for breath, the Mortimer girl grabbed Owen's hand and dragged him away at a run to escape her. It was like playing the seeking game, only better. After sundown, he waited a long time before sneaking to the tower. He wanted to make sure that his adventure would go unnoticed by his new companion, so he stole into the secret passages and made his way to the Mortimer girl's chamber. He watched from a secret panel on the wall as Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer built a little fort out of chairs and blankets, with only a stubby candle for light. Suspecting she'd be occupied for a while, Owen stole up to the tower. When he entered the room, Anchorette was lying on the bed, clutching her middle. She looked tired and uncomfortable, and he could see she was in no mood to play wiser.
"Hello, Owen," she greeted, her voice weak. "I left the tea for you on the table."
He nestled by the edge of the bed, his stomach growling at the sight of the nearby tray of uneaten food. He was always hungry.
"I'm not feeling well tonight," she said, reaching out tenderly and tousling his hair. "Tomorrow night, perhaps."
"Are you sick?" he asked her.
She nodded.
"Mostly tired. I'll feel better tomorrow, I think. Would you take the tray down to the kitchen for me? I don't think I can make it tonight."
"Of course," he answered, and then took it. "Can I ask you something?"
"You always can," she said with a little gasp of pain. "I heard about Lord Bletchley today."
"Who told you about him?" she asked, her voice showing her interest.
"The Mortimer girl," he replied.
"Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer?"
Anchorette asked playfully.
"What did she tell you?"
Owen knew this was an important moment. He wanted to see if he could trust Anchorette fully. So he decided to test her. He altered some of the story. He said that Severn ordered Bletchley to murder his nephews. He wanted to know if that were true. Anchorette was quiet for a moment, her eyes lost in thought.
"No. I'm certain that's not true," she said. "I don't believe the king ordered his nephew's deaths. It was Bletchley's handiwork."
She frowned, her face troubled.
"Many do believe Severn ordered it, so I'm not surprised at the story, only that Duke Horwath did not correct his granddaughter."
She shrugged, and Owen felt a surge of relief.
"How do you know he didn't?" Owen stammered. "I was just thinking, you told me the king was fountain blessed. Couldn't he persuade someone that he didn't do something that he did?"
Anchorette gazed at him with a look that reminded him of the one the Mortimer girl had given him. A look of respect and admiration. It made him flush with warmth.
"Are you sure you are only 8?
She asked with a little laugh.
"That was very astute, Owen. You will become a great lord someday."
"How do I know?"
"Because I was there in secret when Severn told the king what had become of her sons. Their bodies have never been found, you see, but we all presume they are dead. The king came to Our Lady to tell his sister-in-law. He is not a humble man, you may be sure of that. And while he laid the blame for their death on Bletchley, he told her that he was responsible. He had trusted Bletchley and given him command of the Espeon. It was his fault the boys were dead."
She fell quiet.
"That took courage, as you can imagine. No one made him tell her, and since I was there, I could tell he was not using his fountain magic. He could have forced her to believe him, but he did not attempt to persuade her or touch her. That is why she had summoned me. She wanted to be sure that she had not been convinced against her will. One fountain blessed can discern the gift in another. I would have known it if he had used it against her. Owen adjusted his grip on the tray. His understanding of the king was beginning to shift. He realized that he, like many, might be looking at him in a way that was not entirely true.
But why does he... Why does he... I don't know how to say this. Why does he act as if he did kill them?
Anchorette's gaze met his.
There is something corrupting about wearing a crown, she answered quietly. It changes you.
I saw it happen to Eridor too. When enough people believe something of you, it can distort your view of yourself. We mimic the judgments of others. It would take a very strong person indeed to resist the effects of so much ill will, so much aversion.
I don't think King Severn is all that strong.
His older brother was stronger, and yet he still succumbed to it.
Severn is becoming what everyone already believes him to be. When he was younger, he never limped or stooped, despite being born with a crooked back. He limps now because of his battle wounds. His brother trusted him, and he walked straight and proud. Now he's transforming into the monster that his people believe him to be.
I did not work for Lord Bletchley when he was the master of the Espeon. He coveted the hollow crown for himself and thought he could intrigue his way to the throne. The faster someone rises to power, the faster they will inevitably fall. King Severn may prove an exception to this rule, I believe.
Dominique Mancini, Espeon of the Palace Kitchen. Chapter 17. Discovered. Owen was a curious boy. He had many questions, and when he wanted answers, he could be persistent. The Mortimer girl had pointed out the new wall, and while Owen was not pleased she had discovered it before him, he could not banish it from his mind. Her suggestion about looking from the Poisoner's Tower, though she had not called it by that name, had inspired him to seek the secret entrance. It would have been easy to ask Anchorette for the information, but he wanted to see if he could find it on his own. He stole away from the Mortimer girl on the pretext of using the garderobe, and then slipped into the secret tunnels that honeycombed the palace at King Fountain. He couldn't wait until nightfall because then he wouldn't be able to see very well. The tunnels were musty, but the arrow slits in the walls provided some light, and he had grown accustomed to slinking about in the shadows. He was quiet and careful, always listening for the sound of footsteps coming from ahead or behind. He had a knack for hearing things out of place and for treading softly. The thought of becoming an Espeon had its charms. From an arrow hole in the wall of Anchorette's tower, he had a good view of the walled-off area, though it was overgrown with trees. He could see a giant hole in the center of the enclosure. It was the strangest-looking well he had seen. It had 8 sides, each with various rows that narrowed like a funnel the deeper it went. At first he thought it was a series of benches like the small amphitheater in the garden at Tatton Hall, but this wasn't a semicircle. It was a full circle. The center of the well hole was a big 8-pointed star. There were crushed stones and pebbles around it, and small sluices that led to the 8 points around the perimeter. It looked like a very interesting place to explore. How to find the way in? Owen spent some time exploring various tunnels around where he thought the entrance must be, but realizing it would require more diligent searching, he decided to wait until after nightfall. After supper, he spent time in the kitchen arranging tiles in the shape he had seen, earning some curious comments from the Mortimer girl, which he chose not to answer because he wanted to surprise her. He was eager for nightfall to arrive so he could begin his search. He would need a candle if he were going to explore new sections of the tunnels,
so he made sure to blow out his night candle early to conserve the wax. As he walked the dark tunnels between the palace's walls later that evening, he remembered his first nights in the palace and how frightened he had been of all the new sounds. He had grown more accustomed to them and could now differentiate the familiar from the strange. The interior ways were narrow, only wide enough for a single person to pass, but they interconnected the major portions of the palace. Most of the tunnels were as tall as the corridors they lined, and in some places rungs were hammered into the stone to provide access to higher floors. In other places, the tunnels were so narrow a man would have to go sideways through them. Those would have been a problem for Mancini, Owen thought with a smirk, but they were sized perfectly for an 8-year-old boy. At various points, they would connect to the tower stairwells, but some towers had secret ways. Owen rubbed his hands on the stone walls, feeling the grooves between blocks of stone. He counted the floor blocks, too, using that as a measure to help him orient himself. At every junction, there was a symbol carved into a flat stone at the corner, which also provided a way to find something in the dark. He normally kept to the main aisles, running the perimeter of the castle. Tonight he intended to explore some new ones. His fat candle was impaled on a nail protruding from the stubby bronze candlestick he gripped and held before him as he explored. The normal day-to-day sounds of the castle began to abate as he explored, delving deeper into new tunnels that hopefully hid the secret of the garden well. Part of him was growing anxious. He did not know how long he had been wandering, but he knew Anchorette would be waiting for him in the tower. He wanted to be able to boast his discovery to her, to prove that he had learned his lessons and could find things on his own. But he could not find any path that led there, and he was getting the feeling that he should turn back and continue his quest another night. But he was also a stubborn little boy, and he really wanted to find it. So he persisted and continued the search, despite the nagging feeling in his stomach that increased with each step. He was not entirely certain where he was, and thought, with a sick feeling in his stomach, that he might even be lost. A sound whispered from the corridor behind him. It was a footfall. Not the sound of a boot in the corridor beyond the wall. The sound of someone approaching within the tunnel. It was coming from behind him. The queasiness blossomed inside Owen, and a cold sweat started on his brow. Going back was no longer an option. The tunnel was narrow, and there was no place to hide, so Owen hurried forward, hoping to find an escape into the main palace corridor. It would be infinitely better to be punished for wandering the hall at night than to be caught in the Espeon corridor. His little heart started to hammer wildly in his chest, and the blackness in front of him became even darker somehow. He heard the footfalls again, coming closer. The boy was starting to panic. Anchorette had warned him this could happen. She had told him it was dangerous to wander the tunnels alone, and that he needed to be very cautious and always listen for sounds that were out of place, such as the footfalls behind him. The narrow pinch of the corridor suddenly filled in ahead of Owen, the walls closing like an arrowhead. It ended abruptly, and finally, it was a dead end. He gasped with fear and glanced over his shoulder. He could still see nothing, but the steps were getting louder. His mind twisted with regret and shock. He needed to think clearly, but fear had flooded him. He scanned the walls up and down, looking for ladder rungs to climb. Nothing. Even the ceiling had narrowed, though it was still tall. His mouth was dry as sand. The wild shuddering in his chest turned into a stampede of horses. He gazed around again. And then he saw the handle latch he had missed. There was a concealed door on one side of the passageway. He almost jerked the latch and flung it wide, and if he had, his time as a poisoner's apprentice would have ended abruptly. Some faint inner voice, probably Anchorette's, cautioned him just in time. All the hidden entrances in the palace were equipped with secret spy holes. The spy hole was almost too tall for him, but they tended to favor crouching people. Owen slid open the cover and gazed through it. It was the king's bedroom. Owen knew this because he saw the king inside. The hearth was blazing, and its flickering light glowed orange off the king's stubbled cheeks. The king was staring into the fire, one hand supporting himself as he leaned against the mantel. His other hand, from his crooked arm, held his crown. He looked as if he were going to toss the crown into the fire and melt the burnished gold. There were an infinite number of hiding places in the bedroom. A huge canopied bed made of enormous stained oak beams, carved and sculpted and glistening with the light. There were fur-lined capes and robes. Several stuffed couches and chairs, any of which would have concealed a small boy. There were chests and wardrobes, even a garderobe. Owen would gladly have thrown himself down the shaft into the cesspit to avoid being caught. But the door might squeal if he opened it, and then the king would turn and see him. He did not want to imagine what he would say. He couldn't let that happen. Still, the steps were coming closer, and he could now see the shimmer of the light on the walls of the passageway. Owen's options were shrinking with each moment. The first thing he did was snuff the wick of his candle, plunging himself into darkness. Darkness was a blanket in which he could hide. But not from a man with a candle. Who was coming? He prayed it was Anchorette, searching for him, but knew he could not trust to such luck. He quivered with fear. Then an idea struck. The walls narrowed at the end of the tunnel. He knew he would not be able to climb with the candlestick in hand, so he left it on the floor. Then he wedged himself into the narrowest part of the wall and began using his feet and arms to shimmy up to the tip, pressing against the enclosure to gain leverage. He was small and wiry and quickly began to ascend. His heart was pounding like a blacksmith hammer inside his chest as he watched the glow get closer. Then the candle-bearer appeared around the bend. It was Ratcliffe. Owen's terror now multiplied. The master of the Espeon. The king's sworn man. He walked deliberately toward Owen, and the boy feared for a moment that he was already seen. He was doomed. He was probably level with Ratcliffe's head when he felt the ceiling of the tunnel push against his head. Owen dipped his chin and continued to climb until he felt the tunnel ceiling on his neck. "What's this?" Ratcliffe chuffed, gazing down at the smoldering candlestick on the ground. He approached faster and stooped to pick it up. The wick was still smoking and the wax was dripping. Owen thought he might faint. He had stopped breathing as soon as he had recognized the man. Ratcliffe lifted the candle to his nose and sniffed at it. A stern, angry look passed his face. He looked at the concealed door, the slit still clearly open, and then hastily jiggled the handle with the hand holding Owen's candlestick.
"Who's there?"
Severn growled as the secret door opened.
"It's me," answered the spymaster. "My lord, were you visiting with someone just now? I found this on the ground by the door." "I've been alone,"
came the brusque reply.
"Alone with my ghosts."
"My lord, someone's been spying on you," Ratcliffe said with growing alarm. "The wick is spent, the candle dripping. Are you testing me, my lord? Did you leave this here to see if I would tell you?"
"Of course not, Dickon,"
the king said with rising anger.
"You've proven yourself loyal over and over. Probably one of your Espeon,"
he added with derision,
"seeking to catch me fondling the princess or some such rubbish. I don't like those Espeon, Dickon. I need them, but I don't like them."
Ratcliffe's tone bridled.
"If it weren't for them, you would have failed at Ambion Hill, sire."
"If it weren't for them, my nephews would still be alive,"
he countered bitterly.
"I don't need to be reminded. So we have another traitor among our ranks. I didn't set that candlestick there. You didn't. Who do you think it belongs to?"
"It might be her,"
Ratcliffe said in a low, dangerous voice. I think she's moving freely in the castle again. There are rumors that she's been seen.
The king gave a weary sigh.
With all the power that comes from this golden band, why cannot I find a single woman who haunts my steps and overthrows my designs? Even my brother would not tell me who she was.
He grunted with anger. Owen's arms and legs were beginning to cramp. The door leading to the king's chamber was still open, just below him. If he fell, they would no doubt hear it and then see him.
She may still be here in the room, Ratcliffe said. Let me summon the guards to search. The candle was still warm.
Do it,
Severin said.
If you catch this poisoner, I want her executed immediately. Do you hear that, my dear? You thought to catch me unawares whilst I slept? Call my guards, Ratcliffe. Make sure all the Espeon know that helping her is treason in my eyes. Are you hiding over here, my dear? Hmm?
The sound of heavy footfalls flooded the tunnel as the two men began to tromp through the chamber. Owen's fear made him tremble, and his knees and arms were shrieking in pain. Ratcliffe summoned the king's guard into the room, who promptly and thoroughly began examining every nook within the chamber. If Owen had tried to hide in there, he would have been caught for certain. After several minutes of clamoring, the hunt was called off. Owen's muscles throbbed and shook, but he would not give up. He held himself perfectly still, wedged up in the corner above the door in the narrowest part of the tunnel. If Ratcliffe had thought to look up, Owen would have been spotted in an instant. Another voice joined the sounds. A young woman's voice.
Are you all right, Uncle?
Princess Elise asked, her voice full of concern.
Someone tried to kill you?
The sound of her voice sent a surge of relief through Owen. He had not spoken to her in quite some time, and he was grateful to know she was still at the palace. The knowledge did not help his cramping muscles. Severn's laugh was self-deprecating.
I'm just a crouch-backed soldier, lass. No one tried to hurt me. Get you back to bed.
Who was it?
Elise pressed, her voice anxious.
We think it was your mother's poisoner, Ratcliffe said venomously.
Elise's voice was firm.
I don't think she would hurt you, Uncle.
Am I supposed to derive comfort from that?
He said with a chuckle.
Do you know who she is, lass? If you know anything about her, you should tell me.
Owen's stomach twisted with dread.
Don't, he wanted to call out. It was me, it wasn't her.
I don't know her name, Elise said hesitantly. But I have seen her.
Recently?
Ratcliffe pressed. There was an intensity to his voice.
No,
she replied simply.
Not since before father died. My mother doesn't want you dead, Uncle.
Quit listening in on your betters,
the king barked angrily.
You are all useless. Be gone. Go outside.
Owen wasn't sure what was happening, but then he realized the king had been addressing the soldiers. The door shut with an audible thud. Then the king sighed heavily.
Lass, you should not speak so freely in front of people. I could see by the look on your face that you were going to reveal more than you ought to have.
I'm sorry, Uncle, she replied meekly. I know you are worried about rumors. I will go as well. It's just that...
She stopped short.
What, lass?
He asked softly, almost tenderly.
Your Majesty, Ratcliffe said in a warning tone.
Be silent, man. She's my niece. She is the only colorful thing in this drab world. The only nectar amidst so much poison. Say on, lass.
You already know,
Elise said uncomfortably. Her voice was quavering.
What my mother suggested you do. I'm not opposed to it, Uncle.
He coughed against his fist. Owen could tell by the sound.
It's not that simple, lass, Things are never that simple. Off with you now. Go.
His voice was coaxing, calm. Owen heard the door open and shut again. Ratcliffe sounded uptight when he spoke next.
There will be rumors again,
he said.
I already know that,
the king said flatly.
After her first plan failed, my brother's widow hoped to wed Princess Elise to my rival so she could become Queen of Ceredigion and keep the line going. That intrigue cost me the wounds at Ambion Hill. By the fountain, Elise could be queen in her own right. She or Dunsworth, if they both weren't barred. But that boy is too much like his father to ever entrust with the throne.
And you won't name her your heir? Ratcliffe asked prudently.
I can't,
he said softly.
Not after everything that has happened.
Ratcliffe sighed. Owen's arms felt like they were going to fall off. Drops of sweat dripped down his chest, but he would not let go. He held himself up by sheer force of will, ordering himself to be as rigid as one of his tiles.
Well, the lass certainly cares for you. She came running here straight away. I know she's your niece, my liege, but there are precedents for it. It would give stability to the realm if you married again.
He chuckled.
As she said, even her mother desires a return to power enough to persuade her daughter to make the match. You're wheedling me,
Severn snapped.
Stop it. I'll send Horwath to find me a wife when I'm ready, if I'm ever ready again. A nice foreign-born girl who doesn't speak our language or understand our customs, that would be my choice. Pity the Aquitanian princess is so young. That realm would be a good addition to my power.
Well, I'll leave you to your brooding, then, Ratcliffe said. Owen heard the approaching sound of his boots as he moved to the doorway. He entered the secret corridor and shut the door, securing the latch and slipping the spyhole cover back into place. He marched back down the corridor, and still Owen trembled until he was smothered in blackness. He waited until there were no more sounds at all. There was also no light. And Owen realized with dread he would have to spend the night in the black tunnel, for it would be nearly impossible to find his way out without a candle. And he dared not go into the king's bedroom to retrieve it.
We should not be encumbered by what we cannot control, and change as suits the times. A promise given in the past was a necessity of the past. A broken vow is a necessity of the present. There is no such thing as honor, or I give him my word. Words, as you know, are meaningless, and only fools trust in them.
Dominique Mancini, Espion of the Palace Kitchen.
Chapter 18. Fear. If Owen had experienced fear before coming to King Fountain, it was nothing compared to wandering the secret tunnels of the palace without a candle. He tried his best to judge the right way, groping with blindness and even crawling on the ground, but his efforts were totally wasted. He was lost, hopelessly so, and the night seemed as if it would go on forever. There were sounds that he understood, the scuttling of rats, the creaking of timbers, and the occasional gusts of wind. But there were also sounds that put him in mind of a person moaning. His imagination supplied the rest. They were the ghosts of the dead princes, the ones whose bodies had never been found. His courage was utterly spent, his misery complete. Ahead, he thought he saw a translucent shape, a phantom shaped like a man but made entirely of dust motes. The phantom stalked toward him in silence. Owen closed his eyes and buried his face in his hands. He listened for the sound of footfalls. Nothing. Not even a whisper of breath. He peeked up again, and it was waiting for him. The shape of a man, all gnats and swirling dust. Owen groaned with fear and then began to sob. He waited for the being to grab him and carry him away into the void. Terror made him huddle in a ball on the floor and sob in choking heaves that grew louder and louder. He could not help himself.
Anything was better than staying lost in the tunnels until morning. He wept bitterly, wishing his parents had never given birth to him. He did not know how long he lay crumpled on the floor, crying. He waited with anguish and suspense for the worst to happen. And then his eyelids detected light. Ratcliffe. He almost welcomed capture at this point. He lifted his head, still trying to breathe through his tears, gulping. And then he saw Anchorette coming toward him with a candle. Owen wasn't sure if it was his imagination, but he got to his feet and ran to her with relief. As soon as he reached her, he wrapped his arms around her middle and pressed his cheek against her stomach. He was so grateful to see her, so relieved to have been found. She set the candlestick down and folded her arms around his head. She stroked his hair, his neck, murmuring softly that everything would be all right. She smelled wonderful. Even in the safety of her arms, he shivered and shuddered, unable to quell the terror. Anchorette knelt down, bringing herself level with his face, and cupped his cheek in her hand. Not saying anything, she peered into his eyes, her gaze full of sadness and serenity. Then she leaned forward and kissed the corner of his eye, where the tears were still coming. She murmured a word in a language he didn't know, and suddenly he felt peace. His heartbeat began to slow down. The tears stopped. Instead of terror, he felt relief. Warmth and kindness suffused him, putting a stop to his spasms. Still kneeling, Anchorette took up the candlestick. She then rose to her feet and offered Owen her hand. He clung to it, so grateful to be led away from the darkness. She took him back to his bedroom and set the candlestick on the table near the bed before helping him under the covers. He could only stare at her with reverence. He would have done anything in the world she asked him to do. Once he was settled, she knelt by his bedside and planted her elbow on the mattress so she could rest her chin on her knuckles. "There's my little Owen," she whispered with affection, reaching out and smoothing some of his hair from his forehead. "You had quite a scare tonight." He nodded, feeling a twinge of horror try to well up inside him. It could not rise above the well-being in his heart. Was that magic?" he asked her simply. She wrinkled her brow a bit. "Was what?" "You kissed my eye and whispered something. Was that magic?" She smiled languidly and then nodded once. "Can you teach it to me?" he begged. "You are too young," she answered, tapping his nose with her slender finger. "Will you teach me when I'm older?" She pursed her lips as if his question caused her pain. "If I can," she answered after the hesitation. "I don't want to be an espion anymore," Owen said, shaking his head firmly. His eyelids were drooping, and he felt so tired all of a sudden. "I was so afraid." "You got lost in the tunnels?" He nodded sleepily. "I found the king's room, and then Ratcliffe came up behind me. I thought I would be caught. I never want to do that again." "But you weren't caught, were you?" He shook his head. "But I was scared. I kept seeing things in the dark." She laid her hand on his forehead, stroking the tips of his hair. "Courage isn't the absence of fear, Owen. Courage is moving forward even when you're afraid. I've known many brave men who have felt fear the night before a battle. Fear comes and stalks them, like a wolf does a lamb." She paused, sliding her finger down his nose. "But when the dawn comes, they do their duty, and the fear goes away. It only preys on the powerless. Owen, you have power." He stared at her, his eyelids so heavy. "No, I don't," she nodded sagely. "You do. Your power summoned me tonight. I felt your need. The fountain whispers to those of us who listen. I had a bad feeling about you tonight when you didn't come.
Most people ignore those little feelings, but I've learned to trust them. I didn't know where you were, but I kept looking, kept searching. And then I heard you weeping.
She caressed his cheek with her knuckle.
Anchorette, will you tell me about the fountain again?
He asked.
He blinked and forced his eyes open. He wanted to listen to her, but he was so tired.
He licked his fingertips and then rubbed the wetness over his eyelids. That made it easier to keep them open.
She gently stroked his hair.
The fountain is everywhere, Owen. It's here in the room with us. It was in your tears. It's likened to water because without water, even a little bit, we would die in days. I can hear its murmur right now, here with us. It carried your fear and despair to me, knowing I could help you. It led me to you. The fountain is power, like a river current. Even the strongest things must budge to its force, given enough time. The fountain is magic. We were all born of it. And it was the fountain that gave me the idea of how to save you.
By tricking the king, Owen said with a weary smile. Has the fountain told you how yet?
Anchorette nodded emphatically.
It's all so very simple. I don't know why I didn't see it before.
Tell me,
Owen pressed. He loved staring into her sad eyes, looking at her lovely smile. Anchorette had come to feel like a mother in this place so far from home.
As you know, I've made an acquaintance of Mancini, she said in a near whisper. He seeks to do away with Radcliffe so that he himself might become master of the Espeon. I have been helping him with his goal. In return, he will help me with mine. One way to prove that you are fountain-blessed, Owen, is if you can bring information to the king before Radcliffe does. It won't be easy. Mancini is helping me track down the first tidbits to help build your reputation. Something that will help you without compromising him. Something that Radcliffe intends to tell the king later, only you will tell him first. You will become a fortune teller, in a way. Only a fountain blessed could have that power of sight.
I'm not sure I am brave enough,
Owen said in a small voice. Anchorette leaned down and kissed his cheek.
Then you must learn courage, Owen. You must learn it however you can.
The thought of Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer came to his mind. She was the most fearless person he knew. How had she become that way? He fell asleep while thinking about her. The next day, the two youths were in the interior yard of the palace grounds, arms held out for balance as they walked in the great circle around the rim of the enormous fountain in the yard. Jewel scolded them for risking a fall, but they ignored her. The Mortimer girl was trying to catch up to Owen. He had to keep one eye on the tiles at his feet and the other on her to make sure she wasn't gaining on him, which she was. He tried to walk faster to widen the distance. The sky was blue and clear of clouds, and the fountain water lapped playfully.
How come you're not afraid of anything? Owen asked as they walked.
Because of my father, the Mortimer girl replied breezily.
He could hear the silver laugh in her voice. She was trying really hard to catch up with him. It was obvious she found this kind of play much more interesting than watching him build rows of tiles to knock over.
How did he teach you?
Owen pressed.
He taught me to climb waterfalls,
she responded matter-of-factly.
What?
He stumbled a bit and almost fell off the fountain wall.
Ha! You were about to fall in, she teased with her silvery laugh. I'm going to catch you, Owen Kiskaden.
Not if I catch you first.
In the north we have the most beautiful mountains. They're covered in snow all winter, but the water melts in the spring and feeds huge waterfalls.
Like the one by Our Lady?
He asked, keeping his focus, his arms helping him balance.
Not like that one, she said, disagreeing. These waterfalls come off the cliffs. They are huge. They feed the river that flows down here. This one is wide, but not as deep. In the north, the waterfalls are beautiful. My father took me for hikes up to the top of one of the waterfalls. There are portions where the mist is so heavy, everything is wet, and it's easy to slip. But when you reach the top, you can watch the water shooting down. They even built a bridge spanning the waterfall so you can stand at the very top of it and watch the water come down. It's like watching a snowstorm from a cloud. I can't wait to take you there, Owen. The mountains are steep and hard to climb, but I've done it so long, my papa said I'm a billy goat.
She made some bleating noises and then started to run after him.
You're not supposed...
Owen stopped, realizing he had one choice, run or be caught. He was getting dizzier with each step, but he was determined not to let her catch up with him.
Stop running, lass! Jules shouted. You're going to fall in, and bless me if your grandfather won't take a switch to you then!
The Mortimer girl ignored her, and Owen risked a glance over his shoulder to look at her. There was a hunter's grin on her face as she charged him, but he kept his balance and ran faster. Suddenly, there was a splash of water, and Owen turned to see that she had stumbled into the fountain water. There was a startled look on her face, and she had landed on her hands and knees. He quickly made it around to her, watching as she rose, sopping wet, her dark hair plastered to her cheeks. She did not look chagrined at all. Rather, she seemed to be enjoying herself.
"Mistress Mortimer, you get out of there!" Jules shouted angrily, hobbling toward the fountain. "My name is Elizabeth Victoria Mortimer!" she shrieked wildly at the old woman.
Then she grabbed Owen's belt and yanked him into the fountain with her. Something had warned him she might do that, but he hadn't been prepared. Before he knew it, the cold water was splashing across his face, and he was soaked. He got up spluttering and then splashed water at her, which made her squeal with joy.
"Out! You two get out of there!"
Jules huffed, staring at the sopping children with anxiety. To his surprise, there was also the hint of a smile on her face.
"Catch us!" the Mortimer girl called,
and grabbing Owen's hand, she began to skip away from Jules to the other side of the fountain. The water had soaked them both through, but it wasn't so cold anymore, and Owen liked the feel of her hand tugging his.
"When your grandfather finds out," Jules scolded, "it'll be a whipping, you hear me? A whipping! He won't whip me!"
The Mortimer girl laughed gaily. Then she released Owen's hand and started to twirl around in a circle, looking up at the blue sky. After a few twirls, she slumped down on her bottom, too dizzy to do anything but laugh. Owen stared in wonder at this girl who was unafraid to dance in a royal fountain. She was sitting down, water running down the dark tips of her hair, smiling at him as if it were only the two of them in the world. Owen pretended to stumble and pitched forward into the water, making a loud splash. She giggled infectiously, just as he had hoped. Later, the two were huddled underneath blankets to dry off by the bread ovens, and Jules was regaling Leona and Drew with the tale of their exploits. Owen was colder now, and shivered under the blanket, not wanting to run upstairs for a change of clothes from his limited wardrobe.
"That was fun,"
the Mortimer girl said, wiggling her bare toes at the crackling flames.
"I don't regret it."
Owen hugged his knees and tried to stop shivering.
You said your father let you climb waterfalls."
She nodded eagerly.
"The water up in the north is so much colder. At the bottom of the waterfall, the one called Mist Falls, there is a little pond. There's a big rock at the edge of the trail, and you can climb it and jump in. All the boys and girls from the valley do it."
"You've done it?" he asked, impressed. She nodded, her eyes wild with the memories.
"It's still a little scary because the stone is so high, but I love the feeling I get in my stomach when I jump. Like I'm flying. I can't wait to bring you there. My papa took me my first time. He held my hand, and we jumped together. It makes it easier when you jump with someone else the first time. The water is so cold. It's like ice, only wetter. You have to swim back to shore before you get too cold. Papa said you can lose your wits if you're cold for too long. But after we climbed to Mist Falls, we would sit on the edge and eat some wild berries and throw the stems into the mist below. My mother never knew about it. She's afraid of falling, but I'm not. It would get a little windy at times, but that just means you need to be more careful.
Did you ever jump off?
He asked.
The Mortimer girl looked at him as if he were the stupidest person in the world.
Of course not. Some village